Welcome to the Sagebrush Shit Show.
All right. My name is Grant Bess. I'm excited today to be starting this podcast with Sam Jackson here. I'm from St. George, Utah originally. I've been at Utah State since 2011, off and on. I'm studying history and English going into secondary education. Yeah,
thanks, Grant. Yeah, we're excited to start this podcast today. Like Grant said, I'm Sam Jackson. I'm from College Park, Maryland. I'm a junior studying political science. Really stoked to be doing this. We've been talking about doing something like this for a long time. Really excited for it to actually be happening. We're going to have a ton of fun here, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, we just wanted to start off with a few random things this week. I was recently in San Jose. We went to the football game, USUSA, the student media team, as well as our spirit squad. And we had a cool opportunity to see a total blowout of a game, 61-10. We got interviewed by some of their local news. A few people had some great spotlights. And our hotel caught on fire the night before. So we definitely had a trip.
What was the deal with that, Grant? How did that happen?
I don't know. It's hard to explain. I was out in the hallway talking on the phone with a friend, and we had the fire alarm go off. I didn't think much of it, honestly. I went back in, got my blanket, thinking we were going to be out there for a while. We had a security guard running around saying, like, I want you to save your lives. You got to get out of here. And I mean, I thought he was being dramatic, honestly. But once we got out, we could see the sparks going up, and we saw the flames and smoke around the building.
That really is crazy. What time of night was that?
Honestly, sometimes between midnight and 1 o'clock. It was pretty late. I was still on the phone with a friend, but it was so late at night that most of our fellow students were waking up half slumbered, not knowing where they were. Luckily, it ended up just being some trash. We don't know which mischievous people had started said fire, but it did not end up being.
Don't worry, everyone saw it, because about three quarters of my Snapchat feed was out in the middle of the night in San Jose.
Yeah, it did seem that way. It was funny. Even the next day, I had to skip through most of my friends' Snapchat stories because it seemed to be quite repetitive.
So what was the whole point of you guys even going out there in the first place?
Well, one of the cool things we've kind of had a tradition of doing, I don't know what the precedent is, but last year they sent them out to USC for the game. This year was San Jose State. We don't play USC or any of the other teams. We had an opportunity to do a leadership exchange with their student government down there, see how things are organized. It's kind of interesting. Their student government is set up as a 501c3. So they're actually a separate institution than their school, whereas we fall under the Student Affairs Department as well. Student media got to meet with their student paper and interact with their podcasters and things like that so that they could really see that. Our spirit squad, of course, was there to support our football team.
Yeah.
As well as doing some other practices and exchanges down there.
That's awesome. So you're a very opinionated guy, Grant. So what would you say, after your experiences with the San Jose State student government, is there anything you could, like to change here that you thought they maybe did better, or that they should do better, that they can learn from us? What do you think?
They don't have an academic senate. So, Sam, I'm on the academic senate here. I represent the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. Go Chess. They weren't just interested. They've actually been looking into starting an academic senate similar to ours. So they had a ton of questions about that. That was cool to be able to explain what we do, how we work with deans, the weeks we celebrate with, those kind of things. It's hard to compare. They said that they introduced us with telling us they had an $8 million budget. I know that our budget as USUSA is closer to $1.4 million. The thing is, those numbers really, the longer we were there, the numbers started to get confusing, and we realized they just weren't comparable budgets in any way.
Interesting.
They have childcare, they have transportation, they have a lot of other things that we don't include in our budget.
Interesting.
As well as just the way they're a 501c3, they have to rent certain buildings with their funds and different things like that. So it was kind of hard to honestly make a comparison between our organizations, but it was a really cool opportunity to see how they do things a little differently. They have a beautiful student center. Dr. James Morales, our vice president, was there. He was getting a lot of cool ideas. There's talk of a new building coming the next decade here at Utah State. So he was getting different ideas, as well as just asking a lot of questions, seeing how they went through the process of getting their new building, so that if we ever do decide to replace the Taggart Center here, we'll have some good background information.
Yeah, that sounds like a really rewarding trip. I mean, it's especially nice to get out of Logan when it was, what, 40 degrees here this weekend at times?
Yeah.
Goodness, it was cold, man.
No, I wasn't happy to be back, Sam.
I saw, I don't know, it was like, wasn't it snowing on the way there or something? It was crazy.
Yeah, we definitely passed through the Sierra Nevadas. It was snowing, and it looked a little bit like the Christmas holiday, which I wasn't pumped about, but... You know what? It's going to be here soon enough, so I might as well just accept it, you know?
Not a cold weather guy?
Not a cold weather guy. I grew up in St. George. I like my heat. I don't mind a good snowstorm here and there, but 4 months of cold weather really solidifies the fact that I will not live in Logan for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember, you know, growing up on the East Coast, every time it snowed, we, you know, as kids, we get super excited because, you know, we're going to miss school or whatever, and you come out here and... You know, snows 2 feet every couple weeks, and it's just like, it just makes life worse.
Yeah, I mean, general. Last year with all those snowstorms, the fact that we had a canceled school day was insane. Honestly, I think we had as much snow last year as I'd ever had in all the years I'd been here combined. That was a big snow year. Hopefully it's not as bad this year.
Yeah, I mean, you could talk about climate change, right, Grant? You know, it doesn't exist. There's snow on the ground. Obviously, climate change isn't real.
Hey,
right?
I mean, it's pretty cold. I don't think it's getting warmer, but I don't know if that's how it works. Anyways, let's get on to some of the other things we kind of talked about, Sam. One of the big things in the news this week has been the healthcare, especially today.
Yeah.
It looks like we're not going to have a healthcare revision bill passed, that Obamacare and a few adjustments are going to be the status quo and for the foreseeable future. What are your thoughts on that, Sam?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's an issue that's extremely important that I don't think many students realize how important it is. There are, you know, as a lifelong Democrat, you know, as a Obama hardcore supporter, I support the push towards universal health care. But at the same time, I will admit there are problems. However, the Graham Cassidy repeal, in my opinion, was not the right solution. I applaud Senators McCain and Collins, I believe it was, and I think there was one other. I don't remember the other Republican that came out against it. But anyways, they pulled the bill today, you know, and ensuring that, you know, the healthcare system will stay in place as is. And it's a really difficult situation because it's really, you know, unless both parties come together, it's really hard to find a good solution. Because, you know, there are problems that need to be addressed in our healthcare system, of course. But at the same time, you know, with the healthcare repeal, you know, millions of dollars are slashed from the healthcare budget and, you know, people will die, which is, you know, which is unfortunate. But, you know, there are so many, it's such a complex issue. It's not black and white. It's not red and blue, as a lot of people like to say it is.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the partisan lines in this one. Obviously, Senator McCain has got a lot of attention. He was not the only Senate member that voted against it. There was four other women this last time, the more publicized one, less recently. But he is the most notable. Obviously, he ran for president. He's a high-level Republican getting a lot of attention. And he came from a far right, not the farthest right, but he's considered a pretty staunch Republican.
Absolutely.
So for him to come out in healthcare, we obviously know his own health. His own experiences in recent months has attributed to his different perspective recently, which it does say a lot.
Absolutely.
About perspective and where you're at and why you feel the way you do about certain things. I think one of the things that's always concerned me about this healthcare bill, you know, penalizing people for not having insurance seems to just cause poverty for poverty's sake. And it's hard to see exactly who gets targeted in some of these situations socioeconomically.
Sure.
As well, one of the things that, you know, I'm one, you know how I am. I don't feel that anyone is entitled to another person's service.
No, I've heard that line before.
You know, I think, of course, no one is against good healthcare. Everybody wants the best healthcare for this
Absolutely.
Country.
Absolutely.
It's hard to see, though, with forcing a doctor to do certain things if he's not going to get paid or if he's not going to get paid the same. You know, I don't get forced to pay for auto insurance other than liability for somebody else. I don't have to have it for myself. So it's hard to see being required to insure myself. Then that's what's frustrating. I just don't like paying for something that I don't personally want.
No, that's completely valid. I mean, that's the standard argument is against the individual mandate. And that's the deal that was cut with the insurance companies, you know, to put in, you know, to be able to stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26, you know, to take care of pre-existing conditions. And these are, these are things that everyone would agree are good. But then again, you know, the individual mandate is what, you know, a lot of people, mostly conservatives, you know, have a big complaint about. And that's valid. And I think this is where there's a fundamental disagreement. I do believe that healthcare should be a right for every American. I think that.
But is it a right? I mean, where's that?
Well, no, sure. It's not in the Constitution. It's not, you know, I think it should be, though. I think we live in the most.
What does that mean? Does that mean if next year we figure out that laser surgery is going to be
no, there's a line
to have a good health.
There's definitely a line. I think that everyone should have access. Everyone, and that, you know, that's a line that Republicans use a lot, is that everyone does have access. They just don't want to pay for it. But I would argue that they don't have
some of the best healthcare
in the
world.
No, they do.
Even the poor have some of the best healthcare.
No, they do. They do. However, we still have, you know, millions of people who haven't seen a doctor in years, and I think that having universal basic healthcare available for every person in the country, I think is a good thing.
Doesn't Medicaid and Medicare carry the people who have the most severe health problems already?
Yes. However, you know, as you know very well, there are lots of problems with those systems as well. And I think it's.
But why don't we improve those instead of forcing everyone onto it?
Well, I'm open for ideas. You know, I am. But, you know, we have Republicans that want to slash everything. Isn't that right, Grant? So,
you know, I don't want to don't use the R word.
Don't use R. Sorry.
I'm not
sorry.
A stated Republican.
You're not a stated. I didn't know
I may
that.
Be registered.
I didn't
but
know
I'm
that.
Definitely.
I'm so sorry.
Not a stated
I take.
Republican.
I rescind that comment. I'm sorry.
You know, and I think this is a hot topic. We're not going to go too far into
yeah.
it. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future. You know, I think one yeah. of the biggest issues as a fiscal conservative.
Sure.
I think people can look at what should happen and yeah. what needs to happen. And those aren't necessarily always the same thing. You know, what should happen is that everyone
right.
should have great health care.
Sure.
I think sometimes, though, we have to realize how much we're in debt. And right
oh,
now,
absolutely.
social programs in the United States are the largest part of our system.
Absolutely.
Part of that is defense spending. I get it. There's other things to be cut, but we can't use that as a distraction for looking at minimizing some of our social program
no,
costs.
I agreed. I mean, Social Security is huge. I mean,
you know,
it's
and maybe
huge
that's
part
somewhere
of our
we do agree. You know, I think Social Security is something that personally, maybe I'm a cynic. I don't think I'll ever see it in my old age. I would love to see a phase-out program where the people who are already relying on it, the people who expect it right now, will see those funds. But there's some point where it's a program destined to fail at some point. And instead of waiting till we get there, we should maybe have
there are solutions
program.
Out there. There are solutions. I mean, you have, you know, lower income people in the United States paying a higher tax rate going to Social Security. Then, you know, sorry, not a higher tax rate, excuse me, a larger part of their income going to Social Security than the wealthiest people in our country. So you could look at eliminating the tax cap or at least raising the tax cap on Social Security as a potential.
I mean, I don't know if socialism
solution.
Is the solution to the problem.
There we go. There's the S word. You brought out the S word. Good stuff. Love it.
All right.
Love it. Let's move on here.
All right. So not to be foreshadowed or not to be overshadowed. We have a big issue in Korea. I don't know if
yeah,
we can call it the Korean
sure.
Missile Crisis, if maybe that's a little premature.
Yeah.
But it's there, you know. This year, we've had travel banned to Korea
yeah.
in the recent 6 months. As of this last week, travelers from North Korea are now being banned. It's not too far from an embargo on Cuba, which we're still under, I might remind everybody.
Yeah.
You know, what do you actually see happening? Not just the scare tactics. We're seeing a lot of scare tactics from
absolutely,
both sides. Right
absolutely.
Now. What do you see happening?
Man, this is one of those, I don't think there's really no solution. You know, you see people on both sides of the aisle just scrambling for something we can do. I think I don't think violence is ever the answer, to be honest with you. I think we should try to approach it diplomatically, but again, you know, you have, you know, China, who stands in the way of that. I think a lot lies on the shoulders of the Chinese to put pressure on North Korea to kind of chill out, to be honest with you. I mean, they're because China continues to support North Korea and sustains them, it allows North Korea to say and do the things that they do. They're really only powerful ally that the North Koreans have left. So I don't know. What do you think about it, Grant?
You know, full disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a member of the U.S. military.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be in any conflict we don't need to be in.
Agreed.
I think the issue that not enough people are acknowledging is the proximity of Seoul to the border.
Absolutely. No, for sure.
You know, it's
absolutely.
Preemptive or reactionary, it doesn't actually matter. What really needs to happen is some sort of diplomatic solution that might not be our option, you know. I think China was smart to come out and say that they would only defend North Korea if we attacked first. Kind of put them in the power play. The ball is in China's court. They did that well.
For sure.
You know, but even a preemptive strike on our side,
it puts our allies at risk.
It puts our allies at risk. People don't realize there's, I mean,
people don't realize how much artillery the North Koreans have lined up outside of the DMZ that could level Seoul in a matter of minutes if there was some sort of preemptive strike. And that's what makes it complicated, because the North Koreans are not isolated. I mean, we have the Japanese who are there, who are also our allies, and the South Koreans. And so it's a really complex, complicated situation with an unstable leader. Some might argue on both sides.
Right.
So
that's what's hard is, you know, I'm an artilleryman for the U.S. Army. People don't realize that conventional weapons, meaning, you know, black powder explosives.
Right.
We're not talking nuclear. We're not talking high-end missiles.
Right.
We're just talking about a bomb that's being shot out of a cannon.
Right.
Like you said, they've got howitzers on the border.
They do.
We've got 9.86 million people in Seoul, Korea. And those aren't things that we can shoot down with a missile defense system.
Yeah, for sure.
Any preemptive strike on our side would actually probably need to be on the border, eliminating those artillery targets.
Yeah.
Before we even did what we actually need to do, which is, you know, eliminating some of these nuclear facilities that they have. I mean, that's our real goal here. We're not trying to destroy their capital. We're not trying to destroy large civilian populations. We're not
Absolutely.
In a war with them right now. Any strike, whether reactionary or preemptive, really just needs to be get rid of their nuclear assets.
The nuclear weapons are all – that's the only leverage they have on the United States.
And the thing is, like you mentioned China. China has a lot of leverage. I think the only diplomatic solution is going to come through China. China's got to be willing to cut off more economic ties to
Absolutely.
Them. As soon as we do that, we have a different issue. And I don't know if that's something we'll see resolved. I hope we do. You know, technically the Korean War is never finished.
Yeah, we're still technically at war.
We're technically at war. And I'd like to see it resolved in a peaceful manner. I don't think anyone wants to see a war.
Absolutely.
Except maybe the people making a few bucks along the way.
No, yeah.
But realistically, I hope we can get this resolved. You know, and I also think, you know, I said it to a friend. I'm worried that we're becoming so desensitized to North Korea because something
Agreed.
Happens every day that one day we're just going to be in war and we're going to look around and say, how did this happen?
Right.
You know, it's one week, it's us sending bombers up their coast that recently happened. You know, they're sending missiles over
Japan. Saying they have the right to shoot our fighters down, shoot our planes down.
Right. They recently said a tweet was a declaration of war.
Yeah.
You know, in 2009.
These are serious things.
Right. Yeah. In 2009, they launched a missile into the sea, and you would have thought the war was starting tomorrow.
Yeah.
And now they're shooting missiles over Japan, and people aren't even blinking. And that's what scares me
that
personally.
That is very scary.
Is how desensitized we're becoming. Compassion fatigue is setting in. We're starting to forget about the people in North Korea that are being starved to death.
No, absolutely.
We're forgetting about the people in South Korea that are at risk.
Yeah.
You know, I personally don't see our West Coast getting hit anytime soon.
I don't
but
see
I do
either,
worry
but
about the Japanese and South Korean people.
Yeah, that's it's a really tough situation, and you hope leaders from other countries as well, United Nations also continues to put pressure on China to eventually do the right thing. So we'll see what happens, man. It's tough.
We'll see what happens. We'll keep that update. I think it'll be a rolling issue as we come back to this in the podcast.
I'm sure some tweets will get sent out that we'll have to have to discuss.
I'm love that we're a tweet reactionary country at this point.
Yeah,
but
I know.
I guess that's just the state of the nation. You know, we've got other issues at home. Puerto Rico is still without power. One of my best friends, Brian Wells, is down there. He went down there after Irma thinking he had dodged the bullet and lived through Maria now. The most intense storm in recorded Puerto Rican history. he's been there without power. He had a hard time getting food last week. He's only got food through Wednesday, and he's hoping to get a flight out. You know, these people down there, they don't have fuel, they don't have power, they don't have food. And unlike Houston, unlike Miami, Florida, these recent instances, we can't just have these vigilante heroes driving in from coast to coast. This is an island.
It's an island.
It's got to come in through shipping cargo containers, the standard routes, or direct military assets. Both of those are happening, and these people are still struggling. How do you feel about the president's response to that incident?
Man, you know, it's tough. I mean, a lot of people forget that Puerto Ricans are American citizens.
And they've recently voted to become a state.
Yeah.
And that's not to say they will become a state. Congress probably won't let it
happen. I don't think it'll happen.
But in 2012, as well as 2016, it went to the ballot.
Overwhelming majority.
Overwhelming majority. Statehood. 2012, there was some controversy over people having voter suppression and different people voting. But it's pretty well accepted at this point that this most recent election, I might stand corrected. I think it might have been earlier this year in 2017. But that vote, they want statehood. Realistically, the historian didn't tell me to tell you it's not going to happen. You know, when you have states like California or Texas wanting to come in, this is clear back to the Civil War. It was an issue of red and blue states. It was an issue of Republican Democrats. No one wants to lose that majority, that minority. Right now, the Republicans have
too much politics tied up in it. Yeah.
You know, the population of Puerto Rico is pretty high. They would
likely
have
five electoral votes, something like that.
Yeah, they would likely have, you know, more than Utah, more than a lot of states as well.
It's a difference in a presidential election. That is a difference.
And that's exactly
that. Two Democratic senators.
And those five votes are five more electoral college votes. They're five more five more representatives. It's an issue. It's definitely interesting to see. But at some point, we can't be the imperialists we used to be.
Right.
I'm one of the ones under the opinion that every territory we should have a vote for independence or statehood. I don't like territories. I don't see a need for territorial status. The people in Guam, the people in Samoa, the people in Puerto Rico, they all have different statuses even from each other.
Yeah.
And I don't see that as fair for an American citizen, some of which have fought for their freedoms.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think that's fair to anybody.
It's another one of these, you know, these problems. You know, I'm looking at these numbers right now. 97% of Puerto Ricans voted for statehood, which is, you know, you can't imagine the United States having any sort of, you know, ballot measure, any sort of election where 97% of voters picked one option. It's insane. So,
well, and to think, you know, most of the time when, you know, people don't get their vote to go through, it's because of money. It's because of certain policies that were in place in that state. Laws had to change. Things had to change on nationwide. We're not in a civil war. We're not in anything. You know, the major issue here is the amount of debt Puerto Rico has accrued on itself, which this incident isn't helping. Their representative in Congress has now said that he thinks they're 20 to 30 years behind where they were at. It's hard to see if they'll ever recover. You know, they are an island. They are tourism. There'll be plenty of private money invested in Puerto Rico. I'm not too worried about that. But their current economy, what they were a week or two or three years ago, it's not going to be the same. It never will be. And it'd be interesting to see if the president were to dedicate more time to get down there like he had in Houston and Florida, how things might be handled differently, or if they're getting secondhand citizenship like they have been.
Now those are kind of staggering numbers where you say, you know, 20, 30 years behind where they were just weeks ago. I don't think people realize how, you know,
big those numbers 30 years ago.
You know, that's
where's the internet? No, it wasn't there.
No, for sure. That's
it'll be interesting to see. You know, it'll be interesting to see if they grow stronger, which things they skip and where they end up. Maybe we'll see some more FEMA money down there. We'll see. Before we run out of time here, let's talk about some of the more recent issues that have happened the last week. So our president, Donald Trump, tweeted out some controversial things at a few athletes this weekend, as well as making some statements in political speeches. You know, LeBron James is defending Stephen Curry. That's enough of an issue. That should be a news point. But it's pointed at the president, you know. I think that was premature. Has nothing to do with it. These White House visits, I think, have been politicized way more than they need to be.
Agreed.
Who cares? You came. You get the reward. You already won the trophy. They're just being used as political PowerPoints right now. I don't really care about them. I think the more important issue has been what's happening with Kaepernick. You know, on one hand, we have Kaepernick not getting drafted anywhere. We've got a guy
signed who anywhere.
Signed Grant. Anywhere. You know, he hasn't been anywhere, and that's the issue, right? Is Kaepernick isn't getting the attention maybe he should. As an athlete, he should be at his prime right now. You know, as a Super Bowl.
He took him to the Super Bowl.
Right.
He took the Niners to the Super Bowl.
And that's within the last 5 years. That should be at least job security for the next five, maybe even 10
more
years.
Well, I mean, you could argue that he's at the very least better than most backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right. Exactly. And it wasn't an issue of money. It's not, he's not getting paid enough. He's not getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, what does that mean? What does that mean for our country? And that was a few months ago. We were dealing with that, and there was all this talk that, you know, maybe the owners of all the teams didn't support this whole movement. And now we're seeing a full flip. You have owners standing side by side with their
Jerry
athletes.
Jones on the field, linking arms. Dan Snyder.
Jerry Jones came out and said no one ever could kneel, and now he's linking arms.
Linking arms, kneeling on the field.
You know, is this just money? Is this just a?
Well, there's certainly some self-interest going on. I think. You know, Trump inadvertently, I think, has helped, you know, the cause of these NFL players who want to kneel during the national anthem. You know, if you see, you know, after his comments calling, you know, people who kneel an SOB, which I think is...
Any publicity is good publicity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's helping
them
out more than hurting them.
No, absolutely. And they have, you know, and you see that, you know, even I remember watching the Sunday night broadcast of the NFL, and they were talking about how, you know, the commentators were saying that they were standing with the players, and you never see, you know, figures like that saying anything political. And the fact that they were doing that, and the fact that they were saying that President Trump was wrong, I think is definitely newsworthy. You know, the fact that we have, you know, entire teams, white, black, you know, whatever, you know, all together sending a message, whatever that message may be. I mean, we could argue about that, but. You know, I think Trump has inadvertently helped the NFL at a time when they were struggling, which is the NFL tends to shoot themselves in the foot a lot. And I think that this was gift wrapped for them. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Villanueva, noted Steeler, comes out of the locker room. He's the only one standing. He's kind of reverse Kaepernick, if you will. But he's not at the same time. You know, he's came out in support of his teammates standing up for what they believe in. He wanted it to be known. He's a veteran. He wanted to come out. He wanted to put his hand over his heart and respect the flag. He's in an interesting position. I wouldn't want to be in his at any point. Caught in between, you know, his brothers in arms and his brothers on the field.
Right.
That's a pretty rough spot. Mixed loyalties, forms of protest on both sides.
Well, did you hear that he apologized for doing that? Did you hear about that?
You know, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, he apologized for standing out. He said he wished he had stayed in the locker room with them, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting right now. I was telling you earlier before we started the recording, you know, we did a scenario in one of my classes where we talked about this. You know, if students chose to kneel in class where they weren't allowed to in a school district where that was not an acceptable action, what do you do? And, you know, I think at some point as a U.S. soldier myself, I'd say, I'm really sick of this week being told what I stand for, what I fight for, what my actions mean. And that's from both sides. You know,
people keep telling
me what, oh, my father, my grandfather fought for. No, you don't know that. You don't know what they're fighting for.
That's
and you're
definitely
putting
fair.
A lot of things in their mouth. I think what's important to realize is that Vietnam veterans were fighting for the people who were protesting the war they were involved. And they were fighting for the same people who spat on them when they got home. And you know me, I like my liberties, I like
absolutely.
My freedoms. As far as I'm concerned, people have every right to kneel, stand, sit,
whatever.
Stay in the locker room, whatever they do. I respect the flag. I love that we pledge allegiance to a flag, not to a government, not to oligarchy or a presidential reign. We symbolize all these positives of the United States in the flag. You know, some people are looking at it the other way, some of the negative things.
Sure.
Our history isn't benign, but it's not all bad either. We're kind of caught in this point historically where our past used to make people heroes. One of my classes, we're talking about this. Should we have statues not just for the Confederates? Like, let's forget about that. Should we be memorializing even some of our positives, our Christopher Columbus's, our George Washington's, our Bill Clinton's, our George Bush's? You know, where's this line? where does it stop?
Yeah.
Who, everyone has some bad on them, right?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton had his controversies. George Bush had his controversies. We're still naming bridges and naming statues and buildings and libraries and schools and airports, all things after these people. And they all had some negatives, you know? Do we remember people for the good they did and look past some of their flights? Do we just stop making people heroes? I think, see, there's dangers on both sides.
You know, it's tough. I think one thing we'll definitely agree on is, you know, the absolute right to free speech. You know, as an American, I think personally that is my greatest freedom, is my freedom of speech. I love the First Amendment. I think it's what sets us apart from other countries. And I, while I don't necessarily agree with, you know, people kneeling for the flag for certain reasons or, you know, whatever, I agree with the general sentiment of it. And I think it's honestly, it's a little unfair to, you know, the way that these players have been attacked, you know, for simply expressing the freedom of speech. You know, you have people that attack the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, for being violent or for, you know, protesting in the streets. You know, and they say, well, you can't do that. And then they have a silent protest on a football field, and that's somehow worse.
Right, and that's what, and I think it's important is this protest is going to come one way or another. Personally, I'd rather see prominent athletes taking knees on football fields than one or two, three people, you know, getting in the middle of the road in Portland, getting hit by cars and then making lawsuits of it. I don't think that is the way to spread a message. People keep making this comparison of, you know, Martin Luther King arm by arm blocking the road. You know, it's a little different in my opinion. I don't think that it should be limiting. People have the right to protest how they will, but I think a march is productive. The Women's March, the March on Washington in 1963, you know, those are positive marches. I think a handful of people blocking a road. I mean, for example, you look back November, right after the election, I stayed up till 4 or 5 in the morning watching the protests in Portland and Seattle, all throughout the U.S. There's protests going on, right? That's a whole nother issue within itself. But what I did see a lot of was a handful of people blocking roads. And I mean, let's be real. Like, Hillary had swept those states.
Yeah.
The people they were stopping from getting to work weren't all Trump supporters. More than anything, they were probably, you know, they're blocking Hillary supporters from getting to work on time. It's not the whole issue. I just think there's an idea of positive protests. It's not that you don't have the right to protest in the road, but maybe consider who you're inconveniencing, who you're protesting,
what
your platform is.
Absolutely.
And I think this football one, as much
it's not inconveniencing anyone.
It's not.
It's
you know,
not.
I don't really care about sports, so this really didn't affect me heavily.
That's where we'll differ there.
But, you know, I do think this is an appropriate platform for them to do that.
No, I agree.
At the same time, we have this interesting position. These are private corporations. At some point, they can
limit them if they wanted to.
Right.
They could.
These owners, these presidents, these managers, coaches, the whole staff could come out and do it, and they have the right to do that. I think some of them have been smart enough to realize the way this country is going, that wasn't in their best interest.
Yeah.
Especially this last week, as we've mentioned. But you know what? It's going to keep happening. It's only got worse since last year. I think, I don't know exactly what the solution is. You know, at what point does the kneeling stop, I guess, is the question. At what point? I find it hard in forms of protest where there's not a direct policy, you know?
Sure.
You and I have both
worked kind of
on
a vague
policy
issue.
Statements.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, racism is here, but, like, what are we looking for? Are we looking for a bill to be passed? If we are, what is it? Let's get something in code so that we can actually protest for something.
Well, I think it started with Kaepernick and his, you know, his position on police brutality, and I think that was kind of his message.
Right.
Although I think
now
it's kind of taken on a whole nother, it's, you know, with all these people doing it, it's kind of, I'd almost argue it's more in opposition to Donald Trump than anything, especially now.
So do we have three and a half years of this? That's the question, right?
After his recent, you know, and that's, you know, what's going to happen next? You know, what do they do? Do they take it a step further? Like, what happens now? Like, do they strike? Like, what, you know, I don't, like, where do they take it? And I'd like to see, as unifying as yesterday was, you know, if these players really do believe in a cause, you know, like Black Lives Matter or, you know, combating police brutality, if they believe that, I'd like to see them take their resources. As to Kaepernick's credit, he has done. I mean, he's donated millions of dollars, you know, to victims of police brutality and to, you know, certain charities. And I think that if we can see these players create some sort of unifying message, you know, creating some sort of, you know, policy-based solution, I think that's far more productive than simply just kneeling. Although I do, you know, support them doing that, I think that they need to take it and then go another step or two further.
You know, I think, like you said, I think these kneelings have to be treated like a strike. And what that means is, right now we've just got guys out there doing picket signs and no one's made a speech.
Right.
You know, we need the players union to get in on this.
Absolutely.
To make some requests, some demands. Maybe some politicians in the states that these teams are based out of. I don't know exactly what the solution is, but we need some spokesmen. We need some people who are making specific requests so that maybe we can get this resolved. You know, a protest with no direction right now is what it kind of feels like. Like
sure.
You said, there's a core value there, but I want to see something that can change. You know, I don't care that much about sports,
yeah.
But I'd like to believe that sports won't always be this politicized
for
entity
sure.
Forever. That
just let it be what it is. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I remember in our public policy class yesterday, we were talking about how it's frustrating that we have all these players finally unified and yet it's almost a distraction
but
from the
what?
Real issues.
Right.
So we have this massive income inequality in the United States, and how do we solve that? And we have healthcare issues, and we have all these things that we could be focused, these players could be focusing their energy on. And so hopefully, again, I think we both agree that they should be doing something, not that they're not doing something constructive, but that could be even better, I think, in the future.
Agreed. And it's hard to, a lot of people have said things, you know, they make statements about, it's hard to take millionaires seriously on the field when they're protesting income equality. A lot of these people haven't necessarily, they're not rags to riches stories. Some of them are. A lot of these players have came from pretty wealthy environments that have got them there. And they want to see more than just talk, more than just kneeling, maybe some direct action. Like you said, Kaepernick's donated, money talks, let's be real. I think that's something you haven't seen. I think there needs to be more donation. There needs to be something. Like I said, there needs to be a fund. There needs to be a policy. There needs to be something that people are supporting.
Something substantial.
That I can actually hold an athlete to some credit for his
Absolutely.
Standing up for his morals and his values. But you know what we said, Sam? We're doing this podcast, right, guys? Here's the thing. We want it to be important to you. We want it to be important to the listeners. So how does this affect us at Utah State, or even just as students in Utah? Going back over those issues, you know, Puerto Rico, it's not going to affect a lot of us. I told you, one of my best friends is down there right now. That's not necessarily going to be true for most of us. But what I think it does is it sets a precedent. How we treat these territories, how we treat natural disasters, they're only coming more frequent. Maybe there needs to be some more reform in FEMA. You know, we saw a lot of that after Katrina in 2005.
Climate change policy, I don't know, maybe.
You know, we don't have it currently acknowledged by our federal government. Maybe that's something we need to look at. But, you know, regardless of what's causing climate change, we do need to have some better action for how we're going to handle these crises.
Yeah.
Crises. I think that's something we need to be aware of. You know, as individuals, we probably need to be more charitable ourselves. We need to be willing to
absolutely
to give up some of our own funds, not just complain to the federal government about it. This missile crisis, I don't know. I guess we'll see where
it
goes.
Yeah, it's hard to say how this is going to affect everyone.
Guess,
yeah,
you know,
bite your tongue and then, you know, something happens. But, you know, I think, you know, like you said, I mean, these international issues, even on a, you know, a smaller scale, do affect us because, you know, things like these happen and they're going to happen in the future. They've happened in the past, and how we set precedent to handle conflicts with, you know, presidents or dictators or whoever who we, you know, deem to be unstable. You know, right now Trump is in the White House and we can only hope that he, you know, hopefully finds a solution. So
like
I think
you said, This is a precedent not just for how we handle war or nuclear arms, but how we handle foreign diplomacy.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of scary things about North Korea. I don't think conscription personally could ever happen in the future, but if there was one war for it to happen, this might be
this
the one.
Be it, yeah.
You know, the Middle East has been a war on terror. Who knows? You know, we didn't have drones. We didn't have a lot
right.
of things. We've got new players. China and Russia have both came out talking about artificial intelligence and warfare in the last week. Who knows? Maybe we're about to see a new era of conflict in the international sphere we've never seen before. It's just something to pay attention to. I think, like I said, people being desensitized, if you're listening as a student, be aware. This is real. This is getting hotter every minute. Yes, it's been happening since 2009, but it's still an uphill slope. You need to be paying attention. You need to know what's going on in Korea.
And I think that, you know, that's, I, you know, our podcast will evolve, but I think kind of the biggest message that, you know, I want to talk about is how just pay attention to these things, because as long as, you know, us as students, us as American citizens continue to have conversations about how we can solve these solutions, I think we'll be okay. It's just the fact that I've noticed on this campus, a lot of people straight up just do not care about any of it.
Right.
And I think that is almost a bigger issue than any of this, because, you know, we're the future of this country. We're going to be the ones in leadership positions. And if we have a lethargic, you know, American citizenship, then we're going to be in some deep trouble. So.
Right. And hopefully we're not preaching to the choir. We know some of our listeners aren't going to be the guys who are otherwise listening to One Direction. But
it's probably,
you know,
an echo chamber here, whatever.
We're trying not to be. Sam and I have vastly different political views.
Yeah.
That's why we made the decision to come together and do this.
Right.
You know, we both have different opinions about how positive healthcare works in this country. But regardless, you need to know things happened this week that could have affected you. You know, we have different benefits from being under 26. Most of us right now that could have been affected. You could have been trying to look for healthcare.
If you had a pre-existing condition, you know, might not have had the, you know, guarantee right to be covered anymore. So.
Right. And you know, this racial tension in the United States right now, it's hard to see where it's going. It's hard to fully understand where it has been and necessarily where it is right now. You know, with this kneeling on this is just one, like, you know, the kneeling is not really the issue. Kaepernick's not a leader, in my opinion. He's a Rosa Parks, if you will. He'll be a notable heroic figure idolized by textbooks 30 years from now. But, you know, this has been started. Baltimore had already happened. We'd already had way bigger incidences than Kaepernick. He was just a name that could be tied to a movement. And you know what? This has always happened. It will always continue to happen. He didn't really do that much. He's still a millionaire who played for an NFL team and went to the Super Bowl, right? He wasn't one of the ones who was getting beaten in Baltimore.
No,
he wasn't. He wasn't part of the ground troops, but at some point he will be remembered for that. And that's going to hit campus. We're already seeing it. We're already seeing other issues come in. You know, recent DACA policy changes aren't necessarily directly tied, but, you know, we've got a presidency that's trying to struggle with some of these things. You know, not all of them are his fault. Baltimore was happening under President Obama.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all about race, but at some point something needs to change this country and we need to acknowledge it. You know, I think it's just important, like Sam said, pay attention. People are complacent. People believe nothing's happening to them. We're not trying to be scare tactics. That's all you guys are getting right now. All you see from Fox, CNN, MSNBC, Independent
Doomsday.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that North Korea was attacking tomorrow. You would think that
our government is going to crumble.
Violence for the last 50 years,
right.
And that we, you know, the 50s and 60s had never happened. You just think that that's what it'd been. Don't be divided. You know, neighbor to neighbor, most of us still love each other. Most of us are still pretty good.
I mean, on both sides. I buy into the theory that most people are good people. That if you meet someone on the street, that they're going to be a good person. And so I think that
you
have to hold firm in that belief and use it to our advantage.
Caffeine, no caffeine. We're all good people. Welcome to the club, BYU.
Cougars or Aggies, you know.
We are a little bit jealous of that Coke contract, but personally, I'm a Mountain Dew drinker. I'm not too affected.
Hopefully you guys don't get too turned down there.
Yeah, I mean, welcome. Come up to our campus, enjoy Pepsi for the week, go home sad, cry, grab a Coke when you get home because you lost the game. We'll be a little jealous. You'll be a little jealous of our wagon wheel. We get it. If you guys are listening to this early in the week, go out to the herd party. Hopefully we win this. You know, we've got a lot of events coming up this week. Get involved with Utah State. Get involved with your local community. Pay attention to what's going around you in the world. It's not going to be long before you're out in the world. You're helping make these decisions. You should already be voting. But if you're not, this is stuff that's coming up on the ballot. These will be things that are happening. In Utah, we've got medical marijuana legislation possibly coming up. Things about redistricting the state of Utah.
Big issue.
There's some big ballot initiatives coming up the next year. Sam and I will try to cover those things as the legislative session comes closer. Right now, they're kind of a lot of talk, a lot of petition gathering. Pay attention, guys.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to wrap up our show for today. Thank you guys all for listening. I'm Sam.
And I'm Grant. Here's the thing, guys. You got to pay attention.